You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for only £12 for our print and online editions, plus get 6 months of digital access free to The Telegraph. Go to spectator.co.uk/telegraph.
Hello and welcome to Table Talk. I'm Olivia Potts.
And I'm Lara Prendergast.
And we are thrilled this week to be joined by Olia Hercules. Olia is a chef and food writer. She is the author of the hugely popular and critically acclaimed Mamushka, Caucasus, and most recently, Summer Kitchens, Recipes and Reminiscences from Every Corner of Ukraine. Olia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Olia, you were born in Ukraine in 1984. Can you start by telling us what your earliest memories are of food back then in Ukraine?
So memories, of course, are hugely unreliable, but the first thing that kind of comes to mind is the first cucumber of the season. Things are changing now, but in the past, before the 90s, everything was extremely seasonal. So throughout the whole winter, we wouldn't have any fresh fruit or vegetables. So that first cucumber come like at the end of May or something, my mum would be making a salad and she would never use a chopping board. She'd just be cutting it over an enamel bowl. And that first kind of whiff of cucumber smell is my first memory, I think. It was just so powerful because you would miss it so much over the winter. And then it's just like, boom, freshness and sweetness and deliciousness.
Was your mother the main cook in your household growing up?
My mom was the main cook, yeah. My dad is amazing also. But she was and still is an amazing cook.
And what are the kind of classic childhood dishes that you'd get in Ukraine?
One of my kind of death row dishes, I think the one, is these dumplings called vareniki. So they're kind of like pierogi, but much kind of thinner dough, a lot more delicate, especially these ones filled with salted curd cheese and some egg yolks. It's a very simple kind of nursery kind of food, but it's so good. You put it into a bowl with really quite a lot of butter, which we call krinichka, which means little pool or little well even. And then you serve it with some thick creme fraiche. So creme fraiche is kind of a little bit sour. The cheese inside is salty and sweet and is just all very pleasing and comforting. And that's one of the dishes. And of course, there's borscht. I know it's a bit of a Ukrainian stereotype, but it was always there. And also incredibly comforting. But also it varied, you know, in the summer it'd be super fresh as well. It wasn't all about this kind of pasta and broths. In the summer, in the south of Ukraine, we'd eat quite a lot of aubergines and tomato dishes and pepper dishes, and it'd be a lot fresher. So it was very seasonal in a way and varied.
And at what stage did you start taking interest in cooking alongside? Presumably your mum taught you to cook.
My mom tried to teach me. My dad tried to make me cook. There was a period when I was 15, 16, when we had this deal that I had to be taught by my mom every Sunday. That was kind of instigated by my dad. But I had no interest in it, to be honest with you. I loved eating, but the process didn't bring anything to me. You know, I wanted to do that. I wanted to probably run around, kiss boys and sneak out to discos or whatever with clubbing or whatever we did in Cyprus at that point. So I burnt everything and it wasn't very successful. And then I tried as a student at Warwick University and I tried to make Ukrainian food actually, but I wasn't successful because the ingredients weren't quite the same. And then I went to Italy for a year because I studied Italian. And loads of my friends, including a really good friend, Daniele Villardo, you know, my age, 19-year-old girls and boys, and they were just making very simple but very delicious Italian food. And that really inspired me. So by the age of 20, I was back in the UK and this whole foodie zeitgeist was happening as well. So I kind of got sucked into it and inspired by my Italian friends as well. And I started cooking a lot.
And just taking you back slightly, because you moved at the age of 12, didn't you, from Ukraine to Cyprus. How did that change your view of food?
Where I lived in Ukraine, we had quite a lot of river fish and crayfish and, you know, something that you might even associate a little bit with Swedish food in a way in terms of fish that we got. So I think coming to Cyprus for me was amazing because I've discovered that I really loved seafood. And it was just incredible there. And, you know, so me and my mom, she still made Ukrainian dishes, but she also started making Cypriot kiftedes, loads of fish and prawns and salad, you know, your Greek salad. We had it every day. Yeah, it kind of shifted a little bit. And she mixed quite a lot of Greek food into her repertoire. So it had actually quite a big impression on me. And, you know, and I still cook quite a lot of Cypriot food. I absolutely love it.
So when you began cooking after your trip to Italy, was that principally Italian food you were cooking, or did it sort of immediately blossom into to various different cuisines?
It was just a general kind of awakening in a way. It was both. It was Italian. Actually, it was all of the cuisines apart from Ukrainian. I tried Ukrainian, but as I say, there are loads of techniques and it's not simplistic, but it can be very simple in terms of the amount of ingredients that you get, and there isn't much spicing, so it actually relies on really good ingredients. And as a student, I don't think I could afford to go to a farmer's market. So whenever I tried to cook with supermarket out of season vegetables, it just didn't fly. So I kind of went, oh, okay, so maybe that just doesn't work in the UK. And then a little bit later, in my late 20s, I started going to a farmer's market. And I actually realized that you don't need that many of these more expensive ingredients. Actually, it was quite affordable. And then I started cooking Ukrainian again and realized it is absolutely possible to cook with British ingredients, good British ingredients, and create beautiful Ukrainian food.
What was the point when you realised that you wanted to return to your roots and sort of rediscover your Eastern European culinary roots?
So it was actually quite further on. After my training to be a chef when I was 28, so almost 10 years ago, a Guardian cook appeared, and it was such an amazing magazine, and I realized that they actually give a chance to previously unpublished food writers. So I just wrote to them and I started writing little kind of recipes for one of their columns, The 10 Best, I think it was called. And every time I would send them my mom's recipe or an Eastern European recipe, they'd get really excited. And suddenly I thought, oh my God, of course. I'm sitting on this treasure trove of this knowledge and interesting recipes that maybe are not that well known, but have their place and are interesting and exciting. And they gave me kind of this first push and gave me confidence. And then I just hit my mom and I was like, Mom, I need to start writing down our family recipes, basically. And then within a couple of months, I was contacted by an agent who eventually became my book agent. Yeah, and she also said, wow, there is a niche for this kind of food in the UK. Would you like to try and write a book?
And why do you think Eastern European food perhaps isn't quite so well known in the UK?
I have no idea. Well, obviously, during the Soviet years, you didn't have access to people's homes. Whenever I talk to people that may have traveled to Soviet Union and they would eat in a restaurant or a canteen, you know, it'd be rubbish. It'd be quite horrible food. Had they come to my grandmother's house, they would have discovered this incredible stuff, you know, fermented vegetables and these handmade like phyllo pastry pies, etc., you know, amazing stuff. So there wasn't access to that kind of Ukrainian food. And then in the 90s, I think, and early 2000s, everybody in Eastern Europe was just too busy trying to survive in a way. I mean, there were really tough times in the post-Soviet world. So I don't know why, but, you know, of course, there's Anya von Bremzen, who wrote some really beautiful books on Eastern European cooking in America. But in the UK, it just didn't happen. So yeah, I feel quite lucky that it that it was me.
Did you expect it to sort of be taken to people's hearts as much as it was? I mean, Mamushka, your first book, was hugely successful. I mean, it won the Fortnum & Mason Debut Cookery Book Award. It sold huge numbers. It was translated into a bunch of languages. Were you and your publisher sort of going, this is going to be a big hitter? Or was it a surprise?
I had no idea how it was going to be. I wrote it in 3 months because it was one of those books that was kind of ready, really, because they were 100 recipes that we cooked in our family and that meant something quite deep. So, you know, I just went to Ukraine, me and my mom, followed my mom everywhere, and we developed these recipes because, of course, they only existed kind of in her head, in a way, or in her everyday practice, you know, of cooking. So I had absolutely no idea. It was a massive surprise.
And have you found yourself adapting many of the recipes for a sort of more Western palate, or incorporating some of the stuff you learned in Italy or Cyprus?
Not much, but because I worked at one of the Telengi's restaurants prior to writing this book, I think I was a little bit influenced. There's a salad, for example, a beetroot salad. You boil the beetroot and then you serve it with some salty cheese and some prunes. And instead of boiling it, I remember I roasted it and it was kind of presented in a slightly Otolengish way. And to me at that time, I was just like, oh yeah, this is what I have to do with this food. And now, you know, I'm embracing the boiled beet a bit more, trying to leave them alone as much as possible, actually, because I think some of it maybe 5 years ago seemed a little bit old-fashioned, but maybe now I'm not wary of maybe old-fashioned ways and embracing them a bit more.
And when you wrote your second book, it sort of encompassed a slightly wider area and wider culinary culture than the very personal bits of Mamushka. Was there anything that surprised you while you were researching and developing that?
Oh, yes. There were a bunch of things that surprised me. I haven't been to... So I went to Georgia and Azerbaijan when I was a baby, really. I was 3 years old. So there's some faint memories and some dishes that my mom and my dad cooked because of our connection to Azerbaijan. My dad's uncle was married to an Armenian woman. So when I went, you know, a lot of it was a huge surprise. But in terms of Georgia, it surprised me how far ahead they've gone in kind of attracting people from abroad, I think, to come and discover their food and culture and how well they were doing it. And I just thought, oh, I really wish that people in Ukraine kind of realize how to do this, because basically you just go to Georgia, and what I would recommend if when people start traveling again and you find a guest house, usually it's a woman's house where people come and stay, and then she would also teach you how to cook. And it's such an amazing setup, and I think it worked so well for them. So it's not very expensive, it's super fun, and you're somewhere in these beautiful Caucasus mountains, you know what I mean? You come out and you're making khinkali dumplings and looking at this huge mountain in front of you. It was really magical. So yeah, that was an amazing experience.
One of the other things you're known for cooking with is offal. And I remember you posted a photo of an ox heart. I think it was an ox heart on Instagram, and there was a reaction to that. I mean, do you think people here are a bit kind of squeamish about offal, or do you think that's starting to change?
It's a shame, really, because I nearly put this other recipe into summer kitchens, actually. There is an elders stew. Elders is the cow's udder. Because, of course, you'd think, where does that part of a cow go? You know, why don't people eat it? But in Ukraine, of course, it would have been eaten. It's quite delicious. And then I started doing research of where to find it, and it's completely impossible to find it in the UK. And then I did some further research, and I found on the BBC website an interview that they conducted with British people about things that have been forgotten that they really miss. And one person says that in the 50s, it's not even that long ago, he remembered eating elders, which is cow's udder, for tea. And that's just the 1950s Britain. People ate it. And it's a real shame that it's okay to post a picture of a burger. It's sad, actually. And then once you see that it's an animal, all of a sudden it becomes this shocking thing. You know, if it shocks you, then, well, people shouldn't be eating burgers either, I think. But, you know, without being preachy, but I really hope that offal gets kind of embraced a little bit more and rediscovered, because of course it has been very popular here in the UK as well.
A big part of summer kitchens is fermenting and preserving. Can you tell us a bit about how important that is to Ukrainian cooking and to your cooking?
Extremely important. And of course, fermentation has become such a trend here, which is a very welcome trend. You know, I really hope that it becomes more ingrained and, you know, it is not a fleeting kind of thing. But as I mentioned before, in Ukraine, living was really quite seasonal. So in winter, you'd have some root vegetables to eat, but nothing fresh tasting. And in the summer, you'd get a glut of something. So a lot of people are still growing their own vegetables. So what do you do? At some point, hundreds of years ago, they discovered that if you drop it into some brine, it starts fermenting and actually acquires this really beautiful taste. But we never knew that it was a healthy thing. It was done probably initially out of necessity and then because of flavor as well. We just love that kind of slightly fizzy, sour, delicious flavor of fermented vegetables. And we still do it. And that's still what draws me to it, flavor. But of course, with the added bonus that we now know that it's really good for your microbiome. So yeah, it's extremely important, and it's not used just as a pickle. You know, we cook with fermented vegetables as well. So you'd use fermented cabbage to make a soup, even gherkins. So your fermented gherkins, you would make a pork or beef broth, and then you'd grate the gherkin in and add a little bit of the pickling liquid in as well, just to give it a little bit of a that beautiful sourness and a bit of a kick. So yeah, it's extremely important, and hopefully people of my generation will keep on doing it.
What have you been cooking during lockdown? What's been your comfort food?
It was actually the crazy banana bread situation. I was obsessively baking banana bread before lockdown. I was on my last 2 months of pregnancy in December and January, and this is all I wanted to eat. I probably just had like massive sugar cravings. I made it with honey and I justified that it's a kind of a healthy cake. I'd use like rye flour and honey and just be like, it's full of bananas, it's fine. I can just go and I was like, just eating banana bread quite a lot. And then once lockdown happened, I have just had my son Wilfred in January. So I didn't cook a lot. In fact, I think for the first kind of 3-4 months, I didn't cook anything at all apart from bread. So my partner, my husband, Joe, was looking after me. And he's vegetarian, so he was just cooking some really fantastic vegetarian food, which was very welcome. Quite a lot of pasta with tomato sauce at some point, I remember, because I was really craving comfort.
And you have an older son as well, Sasha. Did you find that the way you cooked or the things you cooked changed when you had children?
I actually started cooking more Ukrainian food at home. We would spend our summers before he had school, you know, we'd go to Ukraine for about 3 months and stay with my parents. And he was actually quite an adventurous and good eater from the very beginning. You know, I started weaning him at about 6 months and he loved things like borscht. There's a little video of him kind of eating with his hands, like going into this borscht and picking out a piece of beetroot or something and be like, spaghetti. And I'm like, no, Sasha, this is not spaghetti, it's beetroot. And, you know, teaching him. But he loved it. He loved all of my mom's cooking. So I wanted to keep going and for him to have the same kind of connections that I have with Ukraine, you know. So when we went back to the UK, I made him quite a lot of dumplings and borscht and broths. And daft bread, but we cook all sorts of cuisines. I mean, his father's originally from Thailand, so he's got a Ukrainian grandma and a Thai Lao grandma. So he's quite lucky, really.
Do you have a sweet tooth?
I have to admit that I do. I always insisted that I don't, but I think especially it intensified during lockdown, and I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to make loads of cake. And I did. And I ate it and I enjoyed it. And yes, I think we can all safely admit, yeah, I do have a sweet tooth.
Possibly beside banana bread, what would be your favourite sweet thing to have?
Anything involving custard, you know, anything that involves it is my favourite for sure.
And just finally, Olya, to round off on, if you were going to suggest one Ukrainian dish for listeners to try, what would you suggest?
Oh, there is this really fantastic dish. I promise you, I'm not just plugging summer kitchens, but there is a really good dish in summer kitchens, which is a slow braised cabbage and caramelized onions and a little bit of pepper. And it's very good for this season when there's still some red peppers around and young cabbages are coming in. You basically just cook it down, then add some tinned tomatoes and a little bit of creme fraiche. And it's just the cabbage dish of dreams. I promise you, it's so delicious and I highly recommend it.
Olya, thank you so much for joining us. And Olya's new book, Summer Kitchen, is available now.
Thank you for joining us on The Spectator's Food and Drink podcast. For more recipes, food history, stories and drinks, you can head to The Spectator website. La pauvre fleur disait au papillon céleste.